Every January, Hollywood practically shuts down to devote itself to a growing number of film awards parties and industry and critics group ceremonies. North America's largest critics group, the Broadcast Film Critics Association, weighed in with its opinions of the best films at its televised award show last week. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. I've just returned from the 20th Annual Critics' Choice Movie Awards, and I'm delighted to have fellow Broadcast Film Critics Association member and former host of this program, Cynthia Haynes, joining me to discuss last week's award show and recommend some underseen films. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning, Chuck.
I should mention you're joining us by phone from your home in Kansas.
Yes, Lawrence, Kansas, home of the Jayhawks.
Fantastic, and another great NPR station, which I know you're affiliated with now.
Yes.
This is the time of year where we are just, movie lovers are awash in acronyms. We've got the Oscars, the DGA, PGA, the SAG Awards, all of the different Hollywood guilds. But these are all industry peer groups and awards groups where fellow industry members are nominating other fellow industry members. And the Critics' Choice Movie Awards is really something a little different in that it's all film critics who are voting, not people who are working in film, but reviewing film. And oftentimes by this time of year, there's a lot of consensus through all the awards groups of what the nominees are. But I saw some interesting divergence this year, particularly spotlighted since our awards show, the Critics' Choice Movie Awards, was the evening of the same day that the Oscar nominations came out.
That's right, Chuck. The Critics' Choice Movie Awards, I think, are the best predictor of Oscar winners. And we all realize the Golden Globes have sort of grown in importance, and I think the main reason there is that they feature television programs and actors and actresses. And the general public is more familiar with them, and they're not as familiar with, oddly enough, basically independent movies that have just gotten nomination after nomination. The distinction with the Critics' Choice Movie Awards is that the 250, 300 members see virtually everything that's out there. I mean, that's what we do. And the other organizations may get screeners and see which organizations have nominated films. Mm-hmm. And say, well, maybe I should watch those. But our group sees everything, and I think these awards really are based on merit. The films that did not get nominated for Oscars that won awards at the Critics' Choice were the documentary Life Itself with Roger Ebert in his final days. The Lego Movie, the animated film, kind of got shut out there, but really appreciate the awards they got from the Critics' Choice Movie Awards. And Force Majeure, which I thought was probably one of the best movies I saw this past year. It was from Norway. It is a film about family, what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, the stereotypical images we have of masculinity and feminine, and mm-hmm. I just thought it was a brilliant, entertaining movie, and one I would recommend anyone to see.
I agree, and it was interesting to see the filmmakers for each of those three films who'd had quite the roller coaster day, getting up at 3 or 4 a.m. to wait for the Oscar nominations that morning, and then to find that they didn't even make the list, even though they'd built a sizable buzz going into that, and then the deflation comes, and then they come to our show and actually win in those categories. It's really nice to see us award those.
And Chuck, we had an opportunity to sit in the balcony, which really was a terrific spot to be, where you could see people clustering around Angelina Jolie or Oprah or the other actors and performers who were there. And it was a little different. I did DVR the program, and I watched it, and I thought it was really well done. I mean, I was familiar, obviously, with all the films. I have so many friends who say, you know, I've never seen this movie. How come, you know, it got nominated for awards? And a lot of them were just released for 1 week or so in order to qualify for awards. But anyway,
some of these films will be coming out in the coming weeks.
Right, right. And so, and I think our real responsibility as film critics is to highlight those films that are worth seeing. I mean, it's a lot more fun, in my opinion, to praise the movie than it is to try to destroy it with wit and clever comments. So
you mentioned some of the stars that were at the award show, and this is sort of set up as a dinner theater arrangement where everyone's gathered around round tables and fairly intimate.
It is. It's a great
proximity.
Opportunity to visit with these people. And it dawned on me too, Chuck, as I was watching the show. I mean, we really are privileged in
yes.
that we get to see those people who are larger than life on the screen, who create performances that move us to tears and entertain us. And you stand there and you look at them and you're thinking, my God, there's a tremendous amount of talent in that person. And it's a thrill to get to visit with them as a, I wouldn't say a peer, but just as someone who really cares about what it is they do.
Did you have a particularly favorite encounter that evening?
Well, I stood and watched David Oyelowo talk
from
to several
Selma.
Yes, he played Martin Luther King, a man of tremendous class and grace. Very impressed with him. We both had a lot of fun having our daughters attend the event.
Yes.
And for my daughter Alexa, getting to see Alan Leach, who plays Tom Branson in Downton Abbey,
mm-hmm.
was the highlight for her. But the whole table, Ethan Hawke, Richard Linklater, they were just fantastic and very excited about winning the awards. I mean, they were not jaded at this point, although they've won a lot of awards for Boyhood.
I don't think Richard Linklater could ever become jaded. That guy is so mellow and relaxed.
Yeah. Mr. Austin, Texas. And it's just wonderful to see that film that they spent 12 years creating.
Mm-hmm.
That's another movie I would recommend anyone to see.
Yeah, I was delighted to introduce my daughter to Robert Duvall,
mm-hmm.
someone of such iconic status, who also has become quite the fine director in his own right. And when he heard we were from El Paso, we had a nice conversation about Hudspeth County. He still stays in touch with the Hudspeth County Sheriff's Department. He's obviously spent a lot of time out in West Texas making movies. Over his lifetime. But, one of the nice things, you mentioned Boyhood won a number of awards, and that's a very small independent film, really, if you think about it, that was shot over a series of almost 12 years, tracking the development of this one family, and just a really beautiful, sincere, authentic portrait of growing up.
And quite autobiographical, too.
Yes.
I didn't really realize Richard Linklater even cast his own daughter in the film.
Yeah, but that's a good example of a smaller film that perhaps without the accolades that groups like us give it, perhaps might not have a shot at an Oscar. And I really think it could go all the way this year.
I do too, and Patricia Arquette mentioned that when she accepted her award for Best Actress,
really
took the critics to bring attention to their small film.
We also had Jenny Slate, an actress that most people will not know, winning for Best Actress in a Comedy for Obvious Child, another tiny film that has not played anywhere near El Paso, but probably will soon be available on Netflix because of awards like this. I thought this would be a good segue, though, to not just talk about the awards show and the usual suspects of winners, which can be found online, but maybe recommend to listeners some films that we thought were overlooked or underseen, but still notable in their own right.
I do want to mention that the dynamics of how we watch films, when we watch films, is changing dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
At this point. And it was always frustrating. I feel very fortunate to be 40 miles from the art theaters in art cinema houses in Kansas City. And virtually all these movies have shown in Kansas City at some point during the year. But the fact that living in another community that doesn't have independent theaters that are willing to show these kinds of films kind of doesn't matter anymore. I mean, things are going to DVD so quickly. Well, I'm sorry, DVDs are going to be obsolete very soon. But they're available on the Internet, whether downloaded or streaming. It used to be frustrating to hear about all these films and really not get a chance to see them, for 6 months or a year. But now that's changing, and they're readily available within weeks of their release. So they're even saying that theatrical release is just a marketing component of of movies these days, that the audiences really are not going to the theaters, but watching them on their screens or on their devices at home.
So films that are soon to come to a screen somewhere near us, big or small, that you would recommend that maybe nobody has heard of yet?
Without a doubt, this film, Force Majeure, set in the French Alps, and a family and how they deal with the aftermath of an avalanche. And there's a tremendous amount of humor, but it's also a very profound film. Leviathan, another fantastic movie.
Yes.
It's about corruption in modern Russia. Ida, it's a Polish film about a nun in training who learns early on in the film that she's Jewish and how she contends with that.
I would also suggest, I think you saw this one, Locke, L-O-C-K-E. It's a British film starring Tom Hardy. It has an improbable setup, which is this is a man, a character, a single actor driving for 99% of the film alone in his car, dealing or managing a number of crises in his life and profession via cell phone. And it's just riveting as both a performance and a film. It's so tightly constructed. It's far more effective than you can imagine it should be.
The other thing that I realized as I was compiling some of these lists is that probably 95% of the movies that I recommend to my friends are foreign films. And I just wonder why, filmmakers in other parts of the world are, have a certain sensibility that a lot of American filmmakers don't seem to have.
I agree. Some of my probably the best films of the year were foreign language films, with the exception of maybe Boyhood. And Boyhood is something that gives me hope that here is a filmmaker in Austin who stuck to his guns about making small films and films based on real characters and real life. And the fact that it's getting so much buzz and traction maybe shows that there is not only a market for that, but a change in attitude about.
Well, and Patricia Arquette made that point when she was up on the stage. You know, they were told, nobody wants to see that, nobody wants to see that. And she said, how do we know what people want to see? And it's pretty obvious. A lot of these films that were funded independently, people do want to see.
I wanted to recommend a wonderful documentary this year, Mission Blue, that was not nominated, but it's a documentary about the state of our oceans over the last 50 years. It is at times very depressing, but what's different about this documentary, I've seen a lot of documentaries about the environment and the oceans particularly, but this one is also an amazing biography of this incredible character, Sylvia Earle, who is this pioneering female scientist who began work as an oceanographer in the 1950s and is still going strong into her 80s, and she's such a dynamo. It's not only about her experience and what she's seen over just the course of her life and what's happened to our oceans, but also her struggle to be accepted as a scientist, as a woman in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and then to come out on top. So I highly recommend Mission Blue. Anything else on your list?
Well, I think it's also interesting that CNN, even Oprah's own station, are funding projects these days, and a lot of these films are winding up on PBS and cable channels. So that's another opportunity to see these especially wonderful documentaries. Also, 2 Days, One Night, by starring Marion Cotillard, another beautiful film about a woman's efforts to hold on to a job that she may not have, and she goes around to her coworkers and asks them to forego their bonuses that year so that, in fact, she could continue to have a job. And I mean, it sounds very trite in a way, but her performance is just brilliant. Jake Gyllenhaal in a movie, Nightcrawler. Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
About a tabloid videographer who's out in the streets. Just terrific. Finding Vivian Mayer, another documentary, is a wonderful story about a guy who discovers a treasure trove of negatives and prints by a photographer, Vivian Mayer, who never exhibited her work, but turns out her work is just brilliant.
I don't know if you saw this film, but we were talking a lot about the foreign films this year, and And one of my guilty pleasures is a little film called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
I have not seen that vampire movie. I'm not into vampire films, but...
You know, just when you thought there was nothing else to do in vampire films.
But an Iranian vampire film, it's gotten excellent reviews. And so
shot in black and white, widescreen. It has a nod towards spaghetti westerns. It is such an ambitious and assured first film by Anna Lily Amanpour. So I would recommend that as well, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. Well, as always, it's great to talk movies with you, and always nice to catch up with you in Hollywood. Thanks so much, Cynthia, for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate it.
I've been discussing last week's Critics' Choice Movie Awards and some of the recommended underseen films of the last year with fellow member of the Broadcast Film Critics Association and former host of this program, Cynthia Haynes. For a complete list of awards winners as well as photos and clips from last week's Critics' Choice Movie Awards, log on to CriticsChoice.com. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.